Welcome back to the Broadway Block. On today's episode, we got a great fellow NHL hockey memer, Andrew Weiss. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, man, it's exciting. This is the countdown to the start of the playoffs. It looks like, you know, all things considered, Lightning should hold on to that spot. It's been rough. We've had some tight games in the past, but that last one really left a sore kind of taste in my mouth, but
It was an interesting game, to say the least. So I could tell you like eight different one-liner jokes I have for it, but honestly, it's just two good hockey teams going at it, and it's always fun to watch when the Rangers come to town.
So how are you feeling about your playoff chances this year?
Yeah, honestly, feeling pretty good about making the playoffs, considering the recent hot streak the team has been on the last few weeks. In terms of performance in the playoffs, it just depends on how well defensively this team holds up. Offensive depth was a concern at the beginning of the year, for sure. It's been patched up a bit with the emergence of a few guys, the acquisition of Anthony Duclair, who's been great, former Ranger, of course, added to the list of former Rangers that play for the Lightning or played for the Lightning. But at this point, it's defensively. This is a team that has lost a lot of talent over the last few years. They've lost a lot of talent through injury. Mikhail Sergachev is still out. And Andre Vasilevsky is coming off back surgery, which he's looked a lot better the last month and a half than he did the first half of the year. But, you know, back, we take it for granted. These are athletes, but they are human beings. Back surgery, any kind of surgery, can make an impact on anybody. So, you know, all these years of lifting the team on his shoulders and carrying them to Cup finals runs has kind of worn him down a bit, but last month he's looked good. So if he can play like that and the defense can hold up, this is a team that could go as far as anybody.
We quite literally had the team on his back. I like that. I mean, it is kind of like we watch the same thing happen in New York a lot, you know, and that spotlight can kind of glare a little bit ugly when that person isn't kind of performing to the way that we all kind of know. But guys like that, like Igor and Vasilevsky, I think any skid is usually temporary. These guys kind of tend to find their game when it matters the most and when you're down the stretch kind of making that final push into the playoffs. So I do like your chances as well. Looking at the standings, the team has been on a little bit of a heater, 8-1-1 in the last 10. So anybody has a chance. We were just talking in the last episode. There's a lot of teams out there that you can make an argument, have a shot to go on a pretty deep run this year. Is there a team that you look at and you think, like, I don't want to play them when the round starts?
I wouldn't say necessarily, not because like any team is a cakewalk by any means. It's the exact opposite, to be honest. The playoffs are a crapshoot. Yeah, you have teams that go further than others, more years than not, whatever it might be. We can make all the Toronto Maple Leafs memes in the world if we want to about first round exits. But at the end of the day, only one team wins the cup. And with that, one series can be decided by one game, which could be decided by one random shot, one random bounce. And I know that's such a cliche, but I feel like we, as a general sport fan base, we take it for granted how one play can change a season, a franchise, right? So with that in mind, obviously as a Lightning fan, going to three straight finals, you know, there's a lot of luck involved. There's a lot of skill. You have to do things the right way. But there's a lot of luck involved as well. And I would argue, as a Lightning fan, last year against Toronto, Toronto's first playoff series win in, what, since 2004, so almost 20 years. And I thought it was the best first round that the Lightning have played in their three previous runs to the Cup. Like, they outplayed Toronto five of the six games soundedly and lost three of them in overtime at home. How often do you see a team lose three home games in a series all in overtime? Like, that's very uncommon. It's just hockey. It's the way it goes. So with that in mind, you know, with the teams that are in the playoffs right now, I mean, everyone in the Atlantic's good. I mean, Boston, they lost a lot of talent. They're still good. It's crazy how that works out. It's almost like, you know, you work hard enough, you can be, you know, you have enough talent, you can work a system well enough to be very good defensively and win games. Obviously, David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand are not, you know, any slouches either. But the Panthers were great last year. They barely made the playoffs by one point. They were an eighth seed. They went to the cup. But they were a President's Trophy winning team before that, and they could win it again this year. Toronto every year has talent. Yes, they haven't gone further than the second round, but they have talent every year. So And that's just the Atlantic. I mean, the Metro, it's the same thing. Carolina can never score past the second round, and this year they pick up Jake Guentzel. The Rangers have so much talent. They're so deep, and they have a great goaltender that can steal a series, let alone a game.
One point I was thinking about that I wanted to bring up is me and Steve have speculated before that the Rangers now are kind of where the Bolts were after that 2015 finals loss. You know, we've touched a little bit of playoffs with this team, and we're ready to go to the next level. So now that we think Laviolette is the guy, and he looks like he knows what he's doing on making the right line changes and making the right calls that Gerard Gallant didn't want to make, from an outsider's point of view, especially being a Bolts fan, do you feel like the Rangers are kind of on that like edge to cusp a final and maybe get a cup finally?
I mean, there's obviously always potential when you have one of the best goalies in the world in Igor Shesterkin. It's certainly a possibility. You know, I know Vegas last year had, you know, 27 different goalies, but with Vegas aside, considering how deep and talented their defensive core was, a lot of times you see these teams that go on deep playoff runs have goalies that perform at minimum admirably, if not at the highest level. Right, you're not really seeing a lot of teams winning a cup, let alone making it to the final, on the back of a goalie putting up an 890. Like, it's just not happening. And more often than not, you're seeing a 920 than you are a 900. So anytime you have a good goalie, you're a threat. So the Rangers are a threat. If the Islanders somehow sneak in, neither Sorokin decides to stand on his head, they're a threat. I'm a firm believer, and I could be wrong, and Vegas last year was a great point that it certainly does happen. But I'm a firm believer that if you have two goalies, you have no goalies. I, again, will remind us that these are human beings. And as a professional goalie or as a goalie in rec league, if there's another goalie waiting in the wings, you know you have a leash, whether it's short, long, whatever. If Andrei Vasilevskiy gives up 22 goals in his first two playoff games this year, he's still going to start game three. He knows that. So he can go out there, he can play and not have that over his shoulder. If Linus Ullmark does it, or Freddie Anderson does it, Carolina and Boston, respectively, or reverse that, they're starting a different guy game too. So when you're a goalie, you know that's in the back of your head. To me, you don't perform as well. And honestly, you can argue that case for Aiden Hill because Vegas didn't really have a choice. So he kind of had that mental mindset as well after Laurent Brossard got hurt.
It's funny when Joe said that we remind him of the Bolts from a few years ago. I was thinking that he was referring to when they lost to the Jackets and then went on to do what they did. You know, it's just funny that that's exactly where my brain went to, because we do have that guy on the team and we do think about that first round loss a lot this year, as you know, there's been a lot to look forward to because of how good the season's been so far with the Rangers. But that funk of last year, like, we have to get over that. If we don't get past the first round, this is all we're ever going to hear about. And there's a lot of pressure, I feel like, to go out and do that. And I remember the line, like, they created a monster when they did that in the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I'm eager to see what kind of a fire this can ignite with the team, because, I mean, you framed it out pretty well. These guys are more than capable of it. It's just, can they do it when that kind of pressure cooker environment starts? And there's probably no bigger one than Madison Square Garden. So, I mean, that first round opponent, hopefully, is someone that we can kind of ride that momentum with. But I mean, you touched on it a little bit. It's going to take contributions from everybody in addition to those star guys. So,
yeah. And to that point, the thing with the Jacket series was, I mean, obviously the Bruins came in last year and set these crazy records and all that great stuff. And they lost the first round too. But the thing with the Jacket series was, this was a team for the Lightning. This is a team that went into that series with the arguably the best regular season of all time. Whether or not you want to say it is, it's fine. It's at least up there, right? You don't have to argue if it's number one, but at the time, people are looking at this team. Okay, they're the best goal scoring team in the league. They're one of the best in goals against. They're one of the best power plays. They're one of the best penalty kills. Like, they were across the board one of the top three teams in every category about. So when you look at that, it's like, okay, well, on paper, this is obviously a contending team that might go in the cup. So for that team to go up, not just go into the playoffs with that kind of momentum, but then go into game one and go up 3-0 in the first period, they're thinking, this is going to be easy. Like, this is what we do. The issue is, they had no adversity the whole season. And when it finally hit, they didn't know what to do. And I'm not saying that be like they've never had any adversity in their lives. They don't know what to do, whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's when you get into a long season of dominant play and it basically just comes like second nature. You don't know how to be desperate. You don't know how to go out there and say, I have to win every 50-50 puck battle and literally throw yourselves at every puck. And Columbus went into that series knowing we have nothing to lose. And that's in 4-0, right? 4 games and a sweep. That to me is what creates the monster. If they had lost in 7, that's embarrassing, but they win some games. So Lightning set the record for most wins in the regular season and then tied the record for fewest wins in the postseason. That drives a fire in you of change. And for the first half of that next season, the Lightning were struggling. Like, they weren't in a playoff spot. They're losing. I remember vividly fighting with people on Twitter about the Lightning. People are saying Lightning need to fire John Cooper. Fire Cooper. That was the big thing, was fire Cooper. And I remember fighting with people. I'm like, look, like, they're making changes because they learned last year the way that they play does not work. And that's going to come with growing pains. And then 3 straight cup finals and 2 cups. I think the changes worked out pretty well. But for the Rangers in this scenario, a first round loss is disappointing, but I don't know if it's devastating. And the reason I say that is because this time of year, when it comes around, yes, you remember the disappointment of losing in the first round, but are you devastated enough to be desperate every shift? Because that makes a big difference. And that's what Lightning learned wasn't, this sucks, we want to win. It was, we have to, every single shift, give everything. And that's why, like, I'll never forget, there's a game 2, I think, against the Florida Panthers, the second year they won the cup. I think like 3, 4, 5 guys in like a 5-minute span all went down the tunnel to the locker room for blocking shots in like a 4-0 game. It's just every shift is desperation. And that's what, like, if the Rangers want to go to the cup, they want to win the cup from day one until Stanley Cup's awarded, whichever team wins it, it's a slog fest. You are dying out there. By the time the Stanley Cup finals come around, let alone the actual championship being awarded, you are dead. Every single game is draining. Like, you should feel dead by then. If you don't, then you're not going to end up there. You're not.
Yeah.
I'll say this till the day I die. The Lightning would have won the cup final against the Avalanche if Brayden Point doesn't get knocked out of the playoffs. But that's going to happen. It's a war of attrition. You could be lined up right now as the Rangers in your best position possible to go win the cup. And then, and knock on wood, this doesn't happen. I'm not trying to jinx anything. I'm not going to say any names, so that way I don't jinx anything. Sure. Someone gets hurt. We'll say someone gets hurt. That's a big important player.
Yeah.
And suddenly your chances drastically decrease. And that'll happen. Next guy has to step up. And that's part of it. Like, you're going to be banged up by the end of it. Guys are going to have broken bones. They're going to have, you know, how many times we see the tweets come out of after the playoffs, this team has this injuries and whatever. And that's just after the first round.
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously, you know, epitome of hyperbole. It's that is the worst case scenario turned into the best case scenario. And is this the same situation? Absolutely not. But it is similar in that we did fire the coach. We did make fundamental, you know, cleaning of house changes. That we fired the trainer. I mean, like, there's huge changes that have been made as far as a reaction. The question is, like, did that transcend just the regular season performance? And does that remind everybody, because it's basically the same team minus a couple names, that, you know, there's a huge buy-in all year long that needs to continue into the playoffs. You're right. There's an attrition-based game. I think we play that game pretty well. We're also ranked towards the top in scoring and PK and power play and every other metric that way. So it's you know, goals allowed and all that. So I think there's a huge potential. That's the problem, is that everyone knows it. And leading up into those years, to Joe's point about the Lightning, everyone knew they were knocking on the door. Every year that they didn't win, it was like, well,
now, you'll see them again next year.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people know that about this team right now. It's just that you can't become the Leafs. You can't become this, like, everyone knows the potential, but kind of like the laughing stock because of your first round history or whatever it is. But that's the only connection I'm trying to make there. It's funny because I was just talking to Joe before the show started about, obviously, you seem to be a big Cooper fan, and probably, you know, connection to those cups. That's got to cement that. I was wondering your take on somebody like Tortorella, who might be kind of like out of your age demographic as far as when that championship was. How do you feel about just some of the waves that he makes for a team, and his buy-in to kind of changing culture and, you know, totally a polarizing guy.
I love John Tortorella. I think he's a phenomenal coach. And I think that you'll find a lot of players who think the same way. And I think you'll find a lot of players who completely disagree. It was right. Like I was, got to do math now. How dare you make me do math? I was 8 years old when they won the cup in 04. So okay, maybe not perfectly cognizant of the impact John Tortorella had at the time, but as you get older, you kind of can see it. And I did have the pleasure of when I worked for the Lightning for a few years, I got to work with Jason Cullimore, who was on that 04 cup team. And he would tell us Tortorella stories, and some of them I can't share here, but this is a guy who he is more often than not playing chess and not checkers with everyone. And there's times where he gets caught up in his emotions at times, for sure. He is an emotional guy. He's emotionally attached, but you'd be surprised how often a lot of the emotion you see from him is completely calculated. And it's both with the media as well as with his own guys. The thing with Tortorella that I always hear is this is a guy that his door is always open. You know where you stand with him. Sometimes it's not perfect. And honestly, I think it's just because he is very old school in that he's going to tell you straight up, this is what I expect. This is what I want. If you're not doing it, I'm going to tell you. He doesn't care if he hurts your feelings. You need to know. And there's guys who can take that and guys who can't. That's one thing that you can never question. You can question how, you know, mentally, how guys connect with him, whatever. But he will go to war for any of his guys. And you can see that with the way he interacts, even with the media, right? Like some guy will come after one of his players, whatever it might be. I mean, look at the whole Kevin Hayes thing. Like that's a guy who didn't connect with Tortorella. But even when he's not on the team, Tortorella is defending him after the whole Cutter Gauthier nonsense. And that one guy who, you know, spread rumors or whatever, Torres doesn't even answer his question anymore. He's like, how dare you?
And yeah, we had him on the show. We
had him on the show.
Really? Yeah, I don't know the guy personally. I don't know anything.
He was
about
a nice guy.
I'm sure he is. I'm not saying this to bash him or anything like that, but it's just like from Tortorella specifically, from his point of view, you know, even with a player he doesn't agree with necessarily, and maybe a reason that Hayes left town or was traded, whatever, he's still, you know, he cares about his players. And that's what I hear about in a very like gruntled way. I've worked with coaches before my time in junior hockey. I had coaches that are, you know, old school, rough, tough, whatever. And some of them were just jerks, but some of them were rough and tough, and they just wanted to drag the best out of you. And you can see with Tortorella, I mean, yes, Columbus had Artemi Panarin and they made some trades, but that team that beat the Lightning, that team was a Tortorella team. They're going to outwork you. This Philadelphia team, there's no reason. And that thing is like, there's no reason this Philadelphia team should be talked to about the playoffs for the year. I guarantee you no one making predictions this year was like, yeah, the Flyers are going to make the playoffs. Flyers fans didn't think that.
They thought they were selling at the deadline, and then they were like, I guess we'll keep everybody, the boys yeah. together. They were
but like if you talk to John Tortorella, he's not going to the locker room and telling guys like, oh yeah, like we're just going to work on things this year. We're not worried about playoffs. Like he's telling them like, we expect to make the playoffs. We will be making the playoffs. Like we're going to work for it. Like no one, like he will make sure that outside noise is not heard in that locker room. And you can see it with this year. I mean, every place he's gone, maybe eventually the message wears out. Guys get a little tired of the grading or whatever it might be. Fine. You know, they had the whole wife swap, coaches swap with Vancouver all those years ago with Alain Vigneault, but you know, it's a guy that cares about his team. And I like coaches like that. Cooper's very different. He's a lot softer and with the kid gloves, but they're both very good at building and establishing culture. And you'll always have teams succeed with that, then you'll have teams succeeding with no culture.
As a Bolts fan, so the expectations this year, obviously looks like you guys are getting in, obviously haven't clinched yet. But my question to you is, obviously as the team's aging, you know, with Hedman, we spoke about Vasilevskiy's back surgery. For you, as like someone who's really in tune to the team, do you feel like this is kind of like maybe the last push for, like, I want to say, like those core guys that got you those two cups, three finals?
There's potential for it, for sure. It kind of depends on what happens with Steven Stamkos, just in terms of guys moving on, whatever. I've said this before, and I know people will disagree with me. there's certainly some bias there, but it's also just from my own learnings from being around this team. No team was hit harder by the flat cap than the Lightning. Every Stanley Cup champion gets picked for pieces because guys want Stanley Cup winners and pedigree and all this stuff. And it happens. You look at the Blackhawks in 2010 and 2015, two very different teams. Guys, you know, players get signed big deals elsewhere. I'm sure you guys know from fan favorite Barkley Goodrow, which is the only way I'll describe it, because I know how well he's loved in New York.
Yeah. thanks for that.
But depends who you're asking.
Guys will go, you know, guys get big deals because they bring those intangibles and they win the cup, whatever. But with the flat cap, that got accelerated significantly for the Lightning. So that's going to happen over the course of years. That's natural, right? You find your core guys, the other pieces get moved around. It happens. But the Lightning, when they originally made the trades, if you go back and look for Barkley Goodrow and Blake Coleman, this was before COVID hit. They made those trades with the mindset of we're going to find ways to keep these guys because the cap's going up $4 or $5 million every year. They're going to find ways to keep these guys. But because it stayed flat for, what, four seasons? That's potentially somewhere between $15 to $20 million of cap that's not there right now. Alex Killorn, gone. Andre Palat, gone. Barkley Goodrow, gone. Blake Coleman, gone. Ryan McDonagh, gone. There are eight players remaining from the team that won the cup three seasons ago. From the team that made the cup finals two seasons ago, there's eight players remaining. And that's your core guys, right? It's your Vasilevskis, your Hedmans, your, you know, Kucherovs, sure. But to lose the strength of this team was depth for a long time. So to lose that depth was that quickly is hard to manufacture again. So to your point, it's hard to continue onwards without depth. And every team that's contending, they trade their picks, they trade their prospects, whatever. Because this flat cap, you can't bring in reinforcements. They're literally just dragging in guys. They're trading two first-round picks for Brandon Hagel because he's cheap. And Brandon Hagel's been phenomenal. Sure. So that's not a shot. I'm happy with that deal in hindsight. It's been great. But it's because he was cheap. For 2 years, they got him for two playoff runs at, what, $800,000?
Right.
The same thing with Tanner Janot. They trade five draft picks. Everyone's like, wow, that's awful. It's five draft picks. To be honest, it is an overpayment. But they also had expectations that haven't been met, but they had expectations that he could be a guy that scores 15, 20 goals, throws around 300 hits. And
he was younger too, at least.
Yeah. And he was an RFA, makes $2 million. Because of the cap, they have to make these moves or else you're squandering your Kucherov point, Stamkos, Hedman primes. So with Stamkos being a free agent this summer, if he comes back at a reduced price, not because he deserves less, just because he wants to be here, they could potentially surround this team with another guy or two, not a random free agent making $8 million, but maybe like a $3 million piece, a $2 million piece, some depth, and they would continue their window, to be honest, because outside of Stamkos potentially leaving, Victor Hedman, his demise has been greatly exaggerated. He's a point per game defenseman who's been very solid this year for this team. Vasilevskiy, again, coming off back surgery, I still think when healthy is the best goalie in the world. And he can, I doubt there's a team out there that's like, yeah, we want to face Andre Vasilevskiy in the playoffs. I doubt that. Nikita Kucherov, I still remember Dom from The Athletic two seasons ago wrote that he probably hit his peak at that point. He's still a good player. It wasn't a shot at him, but he was saying like he's probably reached his peak. He's going to have 130 something points this year. I think he's still going to be okay for a while. And Braden Point's young. He's in his, you know, mid-20s, going into your late 20s right now. And that's a guy that, you know, leads all active players in goals the last, what, five playoff runs, something like that. Maybe last year skewed it a bit because the Lightning went out in the first round. But the year before that, he led everybody. And he had missed a whole playoff because of an injury. So these are guys that can still win. The depth is the important thing. And that's going to be the same thing for your Rangers as well. You know, if Vincent Trocheck could change a series.
To your point, Braden Point represents an extension of that window that we haven't necessarily seen from cup winning teams in the past. Like you look at the Penguins, just for example, down the middle, they didn't have the luxury of having a 4 or 5 year window of time between their number one center. So you can extend that a little bit longer when these guys move on, because you can kind of build around Point and you already have them in house. You don't have to worry about like some question mark of a draft pick. I don't think that they're going to actually like bottom out like we're going to probably watch the Penguins do so in maybe a year or two. And one thing you brought up is, you know, young contracts. I mean, there's not a team I can really think of that drafts better consistently than the Tampa Bay Lightning, where they always seem to have a player that's coming up that was chosen in the second. I mean, you can point at Kucherov as the most glaring example, but guys that were passed on by the majority of the league and somehow still seem to be a contributing player, household name even. And, you know, to your point about losing all that depth, they lost their whole third line and then some. And now, you know, you mentioned eight of the names remaining. It doesn't surprise me because that is kind of the cost of winning. And you brought up a good point. People pay a lot for those, the price tag of, you know, cup winner. And they've been smart and frugal in their decision-making to let go of guys that had to be a really hard conversation to let go of internally, but, you know, for the greater good of keeping around realistically the core that's going to lead you there now. And like I kind of touched on, maybe when you go for it again, you have some things to unload before stocking up the team for another inevitable push. So
I think too, with draft picks, I'll touch on really quickly as well, is just like, with, for example, Tanner Janot, that's five draft picks, a first, second, third, fourth, fifth. Obviously, that's a lot to give up if you're looking at it in terms of value. But then if you look at like draft picks, for example, if the Predators hit on all five of those guys, that's incredible. But the odds are that first and second round guy will make the NHL. And the third to fifth round guy might be, you know, those fringe guys. Doesn't mean that's how it works out. It could be the third round guy is a good one and the first round guy sucks and he's a bust or whatever. Just in terms of the odds, right? And for every player you're acquiring, you know what you're getting. For every draft pick what you're acquiring, you're just getting ammunition and hoping that you stick one. So for that's why, like, I always look at these trades, like Hagel is for two first round picks. That's a lot. Sure, two first round picks. That's a significant amount of value in terms of trade deals. But with Brandon Hagel, you know you're getting 30-plus goals, 60-plus points, a cheap deal. He's going to be making just around $6 million for the next half decade, which when the cap goes up, which it will this year, that's not a terrible price to pay for 30 goals and 60-something points, if not 70-something points. And you know what he gets versus a first-round pick, two first-round picks. You hope they turn into that. Now, maybe they end up becoming a Nikita Kucherov, and it's like, wow, that was a crazy one-sided deal. But when it's a draft pick, you don't know what you're giving up, and it could be nothing. Like when the Capitals did Martin Erat, Philip Forsberg, that was stupid because everyone knew what Philip Forsberg prospect-wise had potential for. And obviously that turned out to be a very bad deal for the Capitals. But then if you look at some of these other deals every year, I mean, the Rangers made a great deal in signing Artemi Panarin in free agency. You know what you're getting in free agency, but then you look at the trades they've made. And some of the trades they've made, it's like, all right, well, we're acquiring guys and we're giving up draft picks. And it's like, what are those draft picks turning out to be? Or even the other way around, you know, the Rangers, and this isn't a shot at either of these guys, mind you, that they're NHLers. But if I told you 10 years ago, the Rangers would have a first overall pick and a second overall pick in back-to-back years, you'd think you'd have Crosby, Malkin at the top of your lineup. Now, it hasn't worked out that way for Lafreniere or Capocacco, but they're still good. They're still NHLers by all means. They are. But you know, you that's first and second overall versus let alone a first round pick, which could be in the 20s or 30s, which at that point, you know, you're not going to get a Crosby or a Malkin, or you're not going to get a, you know, whatever.
Instant game changer.
Yeah. So that's something to keep in mind, too, with these trades that all these teams make at the deadline. It's like you could be trading nothing.
To your point about, you know, if you trade Hagel for two firsts and, you know, they end up drafting a Kucherov type player, because of it, the bottom line is no one gives a shit if you win the cup. So
flags fly forever.
Yeah, you know, as a Bolts fan, you know, like sometimes the cost of doing business is you gotta really like empty the pocket. And you know, to say that the Bolts are gonna win in the next couple of years, no one's gonna look back at that Hagel trade and be like, well, those two firsts though, right? Like they materialized to, you know, Jonas, whoever the hell, and you know. You should be really upset about that. It's like, it's not going to happen. But
Andrew, it's going to be interesting. The playoffs, definitely going to be chirping. Hopefully we don't see you. you're always welcome back on. You were a great guest, man.
I was going to say, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. It's always fun getting a chance to talk about hockey.
Hey, thanks for taking the time with us, man. Cheers, brother.